I understand perhaps that they want to try to find some way to attract people who are either not regular horse racing fans to come to horse racing, and perhaps they feel like the cool of the evening and the lights, although lights give off more heat than sun. I don't sweat as much in the sun as I would sweat under floodlights when I play in tennis, for example. I find when I used to, I sweat more under the lights than under sun. But the challenge is, will it attract people? Will the purse for the punters be more attractive? And will it generate the type of interest in horse racing that they would like to see return to races at the Garrison? I think, like with so many things in Barbados today, we keep hoping that one shot fix it all. And I don't think one shot will fix it all. You need better quality horses. You need maintenance of the track. We did some upgrading on the track some time ago. Perhaps it's due for another one. You're correct. You need stands, proper places for people to sit, enjoy the races, have something to eat if they want to eat. I went to Gold Cup because I had to work for Gold Cup, and I heard lots of complaints from people who said, I pay X for my seat, and somebody get in the way, and somebody come up here for free, and that kind of thing. So I know that there are challenges that the Garrison face, that the Garrison faces, that just putting lights on it will not fix all of it. The question of the safety of the jockeys, the remuneration, and bringing the fans back to races. That's the challenge that they face. Marketing properly. One of the chiefs there said to me that, yes, they have to do that when we were in conversation, so they understand that. Question is, how much are they willing to pay to make the kind of money they want to make? To the idiot who's talking about my crooked legs, right? I play tennis. I played tennis. I made money running behind balls. I was a ball boy at a tennis club, and I learned to play tennis. It's the actual only thing I could play. I can play football. All the other Johnson men did. We had a whole football team. But I can play football. So I used to play tennis. I was good at it too. Okay? So you could look at my feet all you want to. It don't stop my mouth from running neither. I wish you perfect people would live in your perfect world and leave crooked me alone. One thing I know is all my shortcomings. I've been married twice. So I get told by two different people what my shortcomings were. You can't tell me my shortcomings now. Brass Tacks, good afternoon. 4341790-266-IVOB. That's the WhatsApp number, or you can reach us at brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dennis, and how are you today?
I am fine, ma'am, and how are you?
I have been holding on a while. I just wanted
I noticed
to know if you
wanted
to squeeze in another commercial.
I am not the operator today, so thankfully I am not the person responsible for squeezing anything. Anyway, that's Graham Vaughan today.
You know, Dennis, if it wasn't you,
you would have dropped the phone. I know. That's why I love
you.
I know, I know. Tell me, Mary, how are you? That's what's up.
I'm feeling good, you know, because I see Barbados is changing before I close my eyes in my final sleep. I am very, you know.
So you're planning to be part of that change?
Yeah, because I'm going with Natalie, even though she's not in my my parish.
You'll be supporting her then?
Yeah, I will be. I support her because I like women with a lot of stamina. I won't say balls because I find them very.
You say
weak.
Rocks.
I find them weak. You know, I mean, women can take a pounding. We make the babies. We do everything. I think we've got more strength. So I never considered it a compliment when a man said I had lots of B A L L S.
Perhaps they didn't check closely. I got you to smile. Good.
I'm going to punish you the next time I
That's
see
all right. I have been punished.
Be
I've been
handcuffs.
Punished.
No handcuffs, no whip.
I've been punished. I'll take your
mouth.
Punishment.
Just my mouth that you
I
say
I will
very
take
mouthy.
Your punishment. I'll take your punishment.
No, but I, on a serious note, I congratulate her, and I know the church people will be at my door tomorrow morning telling me why I shouldn't support her. But I know I'm old enough. I've been around the block a couple of times, and I know that every woman has her price. And so that doesn't mean anything to me. Her background has nothing to do with me. That's personal. But her being out there to support her people in Bridgetown, because they have been neglected. I shop every day, once a week in Bridgetown. And it is a neglected city. I'm almost embarrassed when my friends come to visit me in Barbados and they say, what's happening in town after 6, 7, 8 o'clock? Nothing but Chaffet and Kentucky Fried Chicken. There's no club I can take them to. There's no street that we blocked off so we can have little cafes outside. I mean, there's so much that can be done between Pelican Village all the way up to where VOB is, Starcombe is. You know, there's so much to make this a lively city, and it's not being done. It is not being done. And I'm saying not only in the past 10 years, but I will say in the last 18 years, I have seen really no changes in Bridgetown.
You know, one of the things that I thought killed the city, the lack or the movement away of the younger generation from cinemas.
Yep.
Cinemas attracted a lot of young people when I was younger. And once you took a fair lady to the cinema, you then wanted to either woo her out of the dark or woo her back into the dark. So you would at least, you know, have a little walk and chat with her and at least buy her ice cream.
You know, and at least her ice cream. You're not safe.
And
you're
a
not
beer.
Safe because it's not well-lit. It's not well-lit, yeah. So you don't...
You have to make a city lively. One of the things I've always supported, and I want to tell you this, one of the things I've always supported was putting housing, proper housing, into the city. I argued with some friends of mine who were in the hospitality business that places like, and I told the minister so yesterday too, the houses... The red brick buildings around the garrison, where I lived as a youngster, and St. Anne's Fort, that's now St. Anne's Fort, it was St. Anne's Court then, it was yellow, now it's red, that's actually inside the compound where the soldiers are. Those were houses. 14 Bushill was a home, and it's now a derelict place, and horses are put there when they're in quarantine. There are houses around the garrison that, when I see grass growing out to the... Okay, I lost her. When I see grass growing out the window, I shudder. I asked the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Maxine McLean, Ms. Maxine McLean. Good afternoon, Ms. McLean. I hope you are in a lot better frame of mind these days than previous past. We fixed the house on the garrison for a gentleman who was both Cuban and American, and we didn't know it. What happened to it? What's it doing now? Is it there? Can I rent it? Can I buy it? You know, can I use it as my holiday home? What have we done with it? When you move housing out of a city, when you move houses out of an environment, that's why I support the buildings that were put up at the Grotto. Now, we could argue about the price and whatever else, and whether they are allocated and not allocated, and I see they're being used. We could argue about the price, but I support that type of development. Because if you have one-bedroom studio apartments where young people like young Mr. Vaughan across here, or people like young Mr. Stout, who, you know, have a young family and living on income that's not $5,000 a month, could rent a unit, a house, a small cottage for $1,500 Barbados, $750 Barbados, depending on the type of house, in and around the city, where they could get a city circle bus, or ride a bicycle to work if they're athletic, where their children could go to school in the area, where they could walk to a convenience store, a gas station, a supermarket, and come back with their groceries and live in peace and comfort. They will not be upset and grumble about, you know, whatever it is, because they'll be happily raising their family. And then they could walk on the beach and look at their wife in a swimsuit and go back home and have more taxpayers to help us with our pensions. You know, I know I'm being miserable today, but I'm being miserable on purpose. I'm being miserable because this is a silly season. And we're supposed to be asking people, what are you going to do to solve the challenges we face? And it can't be only build hotels. It can't be only put, you know, chairs and umbrellas on the beach and say, is my beach or your beach? Or fixing potholes in the road. It has to go beyond that. It has to be how your citizen feels about living, starting a family, growing in their country. Have to. And we could quarrel about Chinese coming in and Japanese coming in and St. Lucians and Grenadians and enjoying Barbados. But until our citizens believe and feel that I can stay in the land where I was born, and as people tell me, where my name was Stringberry, and find an honorable living and raise my family, and they will continue to be disgruntled. They can find ways of expressing the disgruntlement, and some of the ways that they find to display the disgruntlement will be antisocial. Not all, some. Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Hello, Dennis?
Yes, ma'am.
We got cut off.
Sorry, yes. I suddenly lost
more.
You. Go ahead.
It's okay.
Yeah, I was trying to
but
see if you come back, and you're back.
You're saying.
Good.
I agree with everything you're saying, because I could see even at the Independence Square, Jubilee Garden, they should be alive on the weekends. They should. They should have bands there. We have so many kids that just want to get out there and play. You know, we could have drummers on Sunday afternoons. I see a different vision, and I think Natalie sees that same vision for Bridgetown.
Mm-hmm.
So, thumbs up to Natalie, but I'd like to talk about yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis, I can't wait for you to be the moderator on the People's Parliament, and I'm going to tell you why. I know you are going to challenge a lot of the rhetoric that I heard yesterday. I mean, how can you be a minister of parliament and tell the people, they must think we're real stupid, tell us that it's not up to him for the proclamation of the integrity legislation. There's bits and pieces that are missing. Too bad. It's like everything else. Family law, we amend it. Criminal law, we amend it. The guns law, we amend it. Put it out there, proclaim it, and we will decide whether we want it amended or not. But get it out there. I am surprised that they left Parliament and that proclamation has not become law in this country. You know, it doesn't say much about them. It's social media who have accused many big ups in this country. The only way I wouldn't take someone to court is if they said I have a big mouth. I do have a big mouth.
The challenge, ma'am, will always be how you prove a corrupt act. Because the way the laws are fashioned, it's the same thing. I will use an
Dennis,
analogy I was talking to someone tonight.
Let me get this through.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis,
mm-hmm.
The Bible is open to interpretation.
Agreed.
That's why we have religious ministers or whatever.
Agreed with that too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The mm-hmm. law is open to interpretation.
And it could be tested.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. But when I read the Auditor General's report, and more so than just the report, but the recommendations, there exists sufficient evidence within those recommendations for the DPP to take certain individuals to court.
And this is why I was saying to you, then it would have to be prosecuted. It would have to be supported by convincing evidence. And then you would have to wait to see how long it gets to trial and what happens in the interim. One of the challenges, and this I, I, as I said yesterday off mic, I said a lot of things, and I don't know. One of the challenges, I mean, take for example the report done on CLECO in Trinidad and Tobago. Okay?
Right.
You had allegations of directors who set up companies, who borrowed money from the company to right. buy the shares in the company, to assume control of the company, and did not pay it back. No. To the naked eye, something is wrong. The question is, how do you prosecute that person and under which legislation? And how do you get somebody to support it? I was saying to somebody...
This appropriation of funds, that's the name of the game.
The question is...
Misappropriation. When you take money that is meant for one financial company mm-hmm. and put it into your own, use it for your own personal benefit mm-hmm. and use, mm-hmm. that's the misappropriation. Let's use
who do you charge? Who
now.
Do you charge?
Let's stop teething.
But who do you charge?
Mm-hmm. The person who's got the big house, the big townhouse, the racing horses.
No, but they'll tell you they didn't sign the check.
They didn't sign the check?
That's what they would tell you. They would tell you,
hold on.
But ma'am, you see, and this is why I said, who do you charge and what do you charge them with? Because the person, if you go after the person who has the big house, who has the shares, who not paying it back, they would say to you, hold on, I applied to the company for a loan. It must have been signed off by the directors. It must have been signed off by the principal officers. Therefore, this is mine. No, you would then have to go behind after them. And ask them why they approved it and conflict. The challenge is how the law is framed. And you see, my challenge with it is this, okay?
Right.
One of the problems that I see, and I mentioned it yesterday to the people in the People's Parliament, is how do you get the person who is benefiting to blow the whistle?
Oh, you can with money. Like I said before, when I spoke for the book, money talks, honey.
Listen, okay, so right, but the question is, and right, and they'll say that they were bribed to give the evidence. No, I said to the people in the studio, I hear us talking about integrity legislation. I hear us talking about declaration of assets. And we seem to believe that that will fix the problem. It will not fix the problem unless we have people who are going to stand guard and make sure that the legislation is affected and effective. Because the Bahamas had and still has declaration of assets legislation. Trinidad has integrity legislation. It has not removed corruption from Trinidad and Tobago. Because I walked into Trinidad and Tobago, and I'll not say what year. I came back to Barbados in 81. I went back to Trinidad soon after that to renew a driver's license. I stood in line at the licensing office in Trinidad, and a man walked up to me and said, how long are you here for? I said, what makes you think I'm here for a short period? He said, man, I know you're coming for a while. How long are you here for?
Right.
I said, well, I'm here for the weekend. Why? He said, okay, if you don't want to wait, put your license, $500 in the envelope, leave it for me and come back at 2 o'clock.
Of course.
And I asked my sister about it, and she said to me, there are three cashiers and they're waiting on that guy's clients alone. No matter the length of the line, they're doing nothing. Now, that is corruption, but that's not government. And who's going to blow the whistle?
It's not what? Who does he work for? Who signs?
I don't know who he works for, ma'am. He may be a freelancer working for the cashiers inside. I don't know. And that's the problem. It is facilitated by those who work inside. But which politician am I going to plug it on? Here's the one from the Bahamas. I was standing with a microphone in my hand when the question was asked of a Bahamian prime minister. How is it your assets have moved in the declaration of assets from 2 million to 5 million during a year when your salary is $60,000 a year? And you know what he says? Wise investments, wise investments.
Well, we had that.
And they elected him over and over and over again, in spite of the fact that his income went up by millions when his salary was $60,000 a year. So it's not the legislation that makes it, that curbs the system. It's who is there and how they are operating the system. Now, the problem we face, let's take the situation with name and try to go after a person. And if that person ducks, then we end up wringing our hands and saying, oh, Kadir, what you need to do is walk the system and see where it leads. And unfortunately, right. And unfortunately, we try to do it the other way around, and which is why I say it is the legislation and how it's applied. Now, we had a situation where a prime minister's children were given scholarships. They were housed in London in an apartment.
Right.
When the investigations were done, people asked, so wait, why the prime minister's children get it? Thing and why they get this house. And the prime minister, the gentleman who held the office, actually went to jail for a while. Right? But
he went to jail.
He went to jail, yes.
Has anybody gone to jail in Barbados? I've been
so, but the gentleman came out. The gentleman came out to jail. The question is, were any charges pressed after he was put in jail? Because you could not prove, or it was not even, it was an allegation. He said, I don't handle the finances because of my religion. The finances are handled by my wife. I don't know who gave her the scholarship for the children. I don't know who paid for the apartment. That's my wife's business. That was his defense. Now, unless somebody could prove
you
that giving his scholarship.
He squealed on his wife.
He didn't squeal on his wife because he didn't put any evidence against her. He simply made that statement. And you can't, as far as I know, husbands don't give evidence against their wives in a court of law, or vice versa, unless, you know, something happens.
It's
but
a divorce.
Well,
unless it's
well,
a divorce.
Yeah, they unless they're fighting over who really owned the purse. But here's my thing. Unless they could say giving a scholarship to a prime minister's child is against the law, or that the prime minister gave that person some special benefit because of the scholarship to his children, unless you could draw those lines, the act looking at it on the outside where you and I are sitting looks fishy. It looks wrong. But if you cannot pinpoint a statute under which the person could be prosecuted, we can wring our hands. That's what we can do.
Well, you know,
we've been doing it in the Caribbean for eons.
Yeah, well, it's time for a change. And I hope, like, people like Natalie, people that I can really depend on to do the right thing, will do these things for Barbados, because I know there's more Natalie
Candy,
out there,
Candy,
men and women
Candy.
That are bold. If I was younger, I would take on this government, you know. If I was younger, but this is my time now, and I'm not even doing volunteer work anymore. I'm taking care of Miss P. But if I wasn't, I would get out there and fight with this young lady, because I like where she's coming from. And that's where you have to go in this society. You have to fight. I had to fight all the way through school. I told you that, Dennis. 98% of the kids in my school were not black. And I was the blackest, not the lightest.
Okay, we've lost it again. But anyway, thanks for coming back to us and getting that off your chest. WhatsApp message says, very true, Dennis. Usually the question is, were the employees put in a position where they felt they had no alternative but to sign the checks? And it's not usually pursued in Barbados and the Caribbean. I can't disagree with you, buddy. We're on the same page with that one. There comes a time when whistleblowers, this term that we keep using, will not blow the whistle, because it is easier for those who profited to buy their silence than it is for those who are persecuted to buy their testimony, is the correct word that I'm looking for. It's a matter of revenue. That's what a prime minister of the Caribbean said to me. They make some revenue and I make some revenue. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Message I got said, I sit here day after day and hear people talk about corrupt politicians. Please provide the evidence. I certainly would like anyone to share with me, my son, and the world, where, when, and how have I been corrupt. It obviously is from someone who is involved in politics. I made a comment yesterday about perceptions, and I tried to pull up one of the callers a short while ago about perception. There is a belief in the Caribbean, and I want to tell the person who sent me the message in particular, that it's not only politicians that face that. I banished a good friend of mine, someone I cared about a lot, and still care about them a lot, for saying to me one day on the phone, I went driving by that house you're building in St. Thomas, me and my lawyer friend, and my lawyer friend asked me how you could afford that kind of house on your salary. And I put down the phone and I cut the call every single time they call me back. It hurt them and it hurt me. But it's the implications of statements like that that I objected to. Someone said to me, I think a lady in Europe won a seat and she was a prostitute. You can do your research. I don't need to do research. I don't need to do any research at all. In Amsterdam and other places in Europe, prostitution is not only accepted, it's even protected by the state. So to raise up your hand and tell me about doing my research, don't say it diddly squat. I stick by what I said earlier. The other thing is somebody talked about loopholes in legislation. If legislation is crafted by lawyers, and lawyers make their money exploiting loopholes in legislation, you think they'd write loophole-free legislation? Their job is to find loopholes in legislation, no matter how airtight you make it. Somebody will find a way to punch a hole in it because that's what they're trained to do. That's the beauty of the law. And presenting your case and convincing a jury of your peers, if you're before a jury. And that's why I always caution people to stop saying you're innocent until proven guilty, because there are a lot of guilty people who can't be so proven. And there are lots of innocent people who have guilty against their names and they didn't do anything. They just can't prove that they didn't do anything. And if at 2 o'clock in the morning I come home and there's a man climbing through my window with my laptop and my, you know, camera in his hand and I didn't employ him so to do, I have to sit here and call him the accused person. I can't call him what I'd like to call him. And we may go to court and they may find out that I can't see over 10 yards and the light, the dark, and Graham looked like somebody else in the dark and I couldn't make out the difference between Graham and somebody else and whoever the body is, walk. You know, that's called the law. That's the law. But anyway, 4341790, Brass Tacks.
Hi, Dennis. How are you doing?
I am good.
Yeah, I tuned in a little late, well, in the middle of a conversation you were having with someone that I would like you to go back to if you could clarify it for me in terms of they were asking about alternative lifestyles or something like that. I think it's I'm not entirely sure, but was it the new Governor General of Trinidad?
The President of Trinidad and Tobago. The 6th of February, the Guardian newspaper had a story headlined, I am not a lesbian. No, I am not a lesbian. That was a firm response of President-elect when she sought to put to rest questions that were raised on social media about her sexual orientation in light of the fact that she had never been married or had any children. And speaking to the Trinidad Guardian in a one-on-one interview, she made that comment that was the headline.
I
said that in my 60 years on the face of the earth, it's the first time I'd heard that question posed to someone who was assuming the office of head of state. And I was told by my nephew, who works with TV6 in Trinidad, it's the state of play today. Responding to social media is now something that you seemingly have to do because it's there in the public domain. That was the reason he gave for me, having said that I hadn't heard it asked of anybody, including the males who had held the office, some of whom may or may not have been married.
Okay.
That's why I said.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I came in when you were saying to the caller who was speaking with you.
That didn't matter to me. That part?
Was it that it didn't matter to you, or was it that you don't think that should be a question?
That's not what I said, sir. I said the person asked me, and I said to them it didn't matter to me.
Personal, expressing your personal position on it.
That was my personal position on it. Yep.
Right. So would it also follow that I'm asking,
Just asking. No, go ahead. You can ask what you want to ask. Right. Go ahead. Don't be apologetic about asking.
No, I'm not being apologetic. I'm just trying to say to you, this is not intended to be an accusation or anything, but a clarification. So would you say that it's a question that should be in the public forum and that people should want to know as citizens of a country where it is alleged that this is the lifestyle of the person being elected to that office or nominated, however the process goes, or chosen for that office.
I have never in my life tried to say what people should or should not ask. It's their personal preference and it should be asked. The point I was raising was the fact that social media was dictating what was being asked of a person, because there have always been, in every country that I have lived in the Caribbean, allegations about holders of high office, male, female, or otherwise. There have been allegations of secretaries who were ferreted in into people's offices in the night and what they did or did not do. There were whispers behind closed doors. And I don't know it had ever become a mainstream question in the media about a person's lifestyle because they are assuming high office. I've never heard anybody ask the judge if he beat his wife or, you know, some politician male if they horn their wife. I've never heard it asked in the public domain on the front page of the newspaper.
So this era of social media
has changed the way we delve into people's business and make it public. Yes, sir.
Well, it's not only social media that does that, because any reporter worth his salt or her salt is glad for a scoop.
So let me ask you something. Let me ask you the same question. No prejudices. You're close to my age or older than me or younger than me? I'm 60. Don't give me a specific age.
I'm younger.
Okay, you're younger than me.
Much younger. I'm in the 50s.
Okay, good. Okay. In the years that you've been alive, have you ever heard a public figure, holder of public office, asked about their sexual orientation for a frontline story in a newspaper in any country you've lived?
The closest person I can think of, it wasn't it was a direct question about, let's say, adultery.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And President Clinton said, once again.
You were in the United States at the time?
It's not.
No, hold on. Hold on. Were you in the United States?
No,
Hold on. Then forget about it. I asked you where you lived. That's the question I'm asking you. Where you lived. The United States, hold on, sir. Hold on a second. The United States, sir, with all due respect to you two, the United States standards of journalism has never been the Caribbeans, not in any island I've lived in. None. Now, I'm not saying whether that's right or that's wrong. I'm saying it has never been.
Sometimes, shouldn't we?
What?
Maybe we should have that conversation.
No, we should not have. No, sir, we should not have. And I'll tell you why. Because we do not have the same protocols or the same legal framework that they do. And until we do, we will not be protected the way they are.
Okay, well, here it comes back down to what I always speak towards these days in terms of how we have evolved, developed as a society, as a region in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. I really believe that social media, with all of its evils or perceived evils, is still very useful in terms of exposing issues for ventilation in the public arena, right? Because my personal worldview is that there are areas where those who hold power would like to keep in the dark and not have to address.
What are some of those things? What are some of those things that offend you? What are some of those things that offend you?
Impacts personal and private life.
No, but what? Tell me one of them that would affect you.
If I could finish.
Yeah, sure.
Public life impacts personal and private life.
Mm-hmm.
Power. It's positions of power. Mm-hmm. And people use it rather in as a shop owner or a supermarket owner, and I'm holding power, and I got people working for me. Right? I am a leader of a larger corporation. I'm a leader of the nation. People who hold office have to be held to the highest standards.
Sir, that is a load of hogwash. And I'll tell you why. People who hold high office, sir, are human beings.
No, not
and sir, and here's the problem. Human beings will always do something that offends somebody.
Right.
Okay.
Certainly.
So if we set out to develop a code that says these are the things that offend me, and I'm talking about me personally, but the things I've outlined don't offend you personally. Mm-hmm. The standard to which I hold that person will differ from the standard to which you hold that person. And therefore, the choice comes down to you or me saying, because you offend my code, I will not support you in your endeavors.
Hold on.
And this is why I'm walking with this slowly with you. Mm-hmm. What becomes difficult then is for all of us to put all the things that we are offended by into one place and get everyone to agree with it. So that is why...
But that will never happen, though, really.
Thank you. And that's exactly where I wanted to lead you. Because you will always find someone who says, but that don't offend me. So why are you making the noise about it? And what is going to happen is that member X, who has an affair with his... with a 13-year-old girl or a 14-year-old girl and sends her love notes, is not offending somebody who doing the same thing.
Right.
As happened with a prime minister in the Caribbean who was elected back to office, right? And he was an octogenarian when he did it, right? But somebody would choose to ask a female, wait, who that child you have for? And the female would say to you, so what happened to them four other fellas that have children all over the place? Why are you asking that? Oh, I hold you to a higher standard because you're a woman. You should set a better example. How do you deal with that kind of sexist comment, sir? How do you deal with it?
Can I answer?
Yes, but that's why I'm asking the question. I want to hear your opinion. We're having a conversation. We agree on some things. We disagree on others. Tell me.
Okay, but for me, it's a simple matter because, first and foremost, the question was asked, well, I don't even know if the question was asked by the president, if the question was asked of her by the person interviewing her, or if she volunteered the information.
It was asked by the person.
Interviewing her.
Yes.
Okay. That person had access.
The Trinidad and Tobago Guardian asked Miss Weeks whether or not she's a lesbian.
And the Trinidad and Tobago Guardian had access. And she took, seized upon the opportunity to clear the air in the public arena.
My question to you, sir.
If you are
do you believe her or not?
Huh?
Do you believe her or not?
But
right. I like your silence. I like your silence, and I'll tell you why. Sir, I like your silence.
Consequence to me. But I am saying you can't rule out a hand that people can't ask.
I did not say that people can't ask. You see, I don't like people twisting what I say to suit their argument.
I endorse people's right to ask. And for me, leadership, right, and being a leader, it comes with the territory.
Let me ask you a question.
You should be untouchable and irreprovable.
Never said so, sir. Never said so. Sir, look, hold on a second. Let me tell you what I'm trying to defend here and why I'm trying to defend it.
Right.
To me, the most important thing for anybody is their reputation. No, anybody, sir, me, you, the man sweeping the street, public office included, is their reputation.
Mm-hmm.
You can't buy a reputation. You can't get it back when it's gone.
You could buy it, though, Dennis.
No, you can't.
I'll tell you how you could buy it. Good PR and public relations. Stalin, Joseph Stalin, and it's interesting because you had a book reading.
I am reading it still, yes.
Okay. Right.
From Hitler to Stalin.
Right. He had a reputation of being an exceptional leader, and almost godlike in Russia during the 30 years or so that he led it. He had that reputation and image through the media, even while he was executing hundreds of thousands of Russians, and I'm leaving millions to starve. Right? It had to take Khrushchev coming and renouncing after his death, because he was dictator for life. So you can manipulate, go to extremes as a Stalin did, to manipulate and manage and control access to information, so that those who drink your Kool-Aid can think of you in godlike perceptions.
Sir, and even in the midst of Joseph Stalin's machinations, there were people who did not buy it or drink the Kool-Aid. You can't buy a reputation. You could mask it, you could masquerade it, you could PR it to death. You can't buy a reputation. And I do not believe that it should be destroyed on the altar of allegations by people who will not say who they are and remain anonymous while trying to destroy who or what I am. And that's the problem I have with that. Now, the question I asked you about whether or not you believe, and you say it doesn't matter to you, is this. If that question is asked of every holder of public office in the Caribbean, male or female, there are those who will say, I don't believe her, or I don't believe him. He lie, with no other evidence other than the fact that they don't like the body. You understand? So, we will disagree on that point, but it is something I'm sure we will debate as time goes on. I find it interesting, though. And I encourage you to continue your contributions to Dr. Brass Tacks. Thank you for being a part of today's program. Thank you, Graham Vaughan and John Stout, who had to weather a little bit of a challenge to make it through. And to those who, you know, sent their comments hither, thither, or yon, on behalf of the team, have a good afternoon.